What's up, Conference USA fans? Welcome into another episode of the CUSA Insider Pod, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Josh Yonas, filling in as host for Sarah Rudolph, unfortunately home with a sick child. So hope everyone's doing well there. But we're excited to bring you a very exciting episode. We've got an incredible interview coming up for you, one that you certainly will not want to miss. I'm gonna tease it and not gonna let you. I'm gonna make you stay until you hear it. Not gonna give it away now, but. I'm also joined here by Associate Director of Communications, Eric Jones, newly engaged, by the way. Congratulations, sir.
I appreciate that. It was a fun weekend, and it's been a few months. It's good to be back on the podcast.
Yeah. Happy to have you back. Talk a little ball. We're going to start with the most exciting part of the show, though. Get into our top plays from week five of Conference USA football. We had some great ones from this week, so we'll start here. Number five, WKU digging out of their bag of tricks for the opening score here. Little reverse flea flicker. McIver just flings it to a wide open Noah Myers for the touchdown. You got to like the aggressiveness early on to get on the board like that, right?
Oh, yeah. A little razzle-dazzle ain't ever going to hurt nobody. I absolutely love to see it. Good to see from this WKU offense as well.
Yeah, definitely. All right, number four. Alonzo Jackson Jr., linebacker for Louisiana Tech. Oh, picks it off here, runs it back 23 yards for the touchdown. Gotta love the dive there at the end as well. Great athleticism here for a guy thrown into a role after the unfortunate injury to Colby Fields. Makes the most of this appearance, though.
Yeah, that next man up mentality. It's good to see this this Bulldog defense just stay hungry each and every week.
Oh, yeah. All right. Go to number three. We got Nick Vadiato slinging one up to Naze Cox, who's been one of his favorite targets of the year. Cox said, he's got a defender holding on to him. He says, don't worry, I can still get this one. He goes up, high points it here. Great catch for the Blue Raiders to get him down to the goal line. All right, moving on to number two. Tristan Gardner, one-handed in the back of the end zone for a Bears touchdown here. Shout out to Deuce Bailey, his first career touchdown pass as a true freshman.
Whew, I didn't know if he could see around him. It's just an incredible catch.
Yeah, he says, the ball's got to be there somewhere. And managed to get a paw on it and bring it in for a big score there at the end of the game. And our top play of the week, Amari Odom. He's back on the top plays. Slings it up to Chase Belcher. Just shows some incredible balance there to get into the end zone. I feel like every time I'm watching a Kennesaw State play, it's just something insane like this.
These guys have been electric, especially these last 3 weeks. Seeing the way they've played compared to early on in the season. So I know we'll get into that more here in the recap of the week, but.
Yeah, I mean, the Owls have been an incredible story. We'll start right there with them. A big win against Middle Tennessee, 24-16 this past weekend. It was a fast start for the Owls. I mean, man, if you blinked or if you were late, tuning into this game, you missed most of the game because before you knew it, it was 21-0 Owls.
Oh, yeah. And that's just been their style of play the last few weeks that I've seen when they're winning ball games here. They're getting out quick and, just hanging on.
Yeah. They their first three scores all with less than 5 minutes of possession in this one. Put the Blue Raiders in the hole. But, shout out to Middle Tennessee, made some adjustments, only allowed a field goal the rest of the way after that quick start by Kennesaw State. And we kind of talked about it in our preview this past week that, a key for Middle Tennessee was going to be, stopping them on those leverage downs, third and fourth downs. That's kind of where they struggled to get off the field this year. Yep. And you look at the box score, they held the Owls to 1 of 9 on third and fourth down. Now, it wasn't a whole lot of, attempts because they, the Owls, unfortunately, were getting it down the field pretty quick. But when they needed to, Middle Tennessee did show some improvement there on getting off the field, which was, definitely a good sign to see from them.
No doubt. And, you just keep that momentum riding into the coming weeks, and you might see some good things happen.
Yeah, and I think some more, highlights that we saw from Middle Tennessee running back Ja'Kale Middlebrook. He attempted to kind of lead another Middle Tennessee comeback. We saw it a couple weeks ago against Nevada. They had a chance there at the end of the Marshall game. They kind of had another chance here at the end of this game. But he had a pair of touchdowns there in the second half. First 100-yard game by a Blue Raider in over a year since September 21st of 2024 against Duke. So obviously a huge milestone for him. He's a sophomore. And he's putting together quite a campaign so far for the Blue Raiders.
Hopefully good things to come.
And then Owls defense, you know, we saw it last week against Arkansas State. They did it again at the end of the game. They're kind of up against the wall. They've led a team back into a game, forced back-to-back turnover on downs on the final two possessions. Caleb Offord had he was our defensive player of the week. Had a couple big pass breakups on that final drive, but you know, again, you kind of saw. You mentioned it. You know, this is what we've seen from the Owls. You see it at the beginning. You see it at the end. You kind of hope that, all right, you know, you start to figure it out in the middle of the game there.
Yep. Yeah, that sometimes can just be, and that's in any sport, you know, sometimes you get out to an early lead or get behind and you're finding yourself in this kind of lull, like I say, on the baseball side of things in the middle innings, like sometimes it'll just kind of ride out and even, you know, second, third quarter, you know, those are just as important as, you know, getting off to a good lead or getting off to a good start and finishing out a game. So, you know, hopefully you get to see, you know, as the season progresses, just more teams putting together a full game of 60 minutes of hard-nosed football.
Yeah, definitely. I think the other thing that I really like from Kennesaw in this one, clean sheet on the offensive line. They didn't allow a single sack or tackle for loss, and obviously that can pay dividends for an offense when you're keeping everyone upright. we'll move on to WKU at Missouri State. A lot of storylines surrounding this one. We talk about, you know, it's the alma mater of the AD, the head coach. It was Missouri State's CUSA opener, but, you know, unfortunately, didn't go the Bears' way in Plaster Stadium, but, you know, this one was, we kind of set this up to be, you know, this showdown of two of the top passing offenses and really felt like that's where it was going to go until, unfortunately, Jacob Clark goes down right before halftime with an injury. And from there, you know, the game kind of shifted a little bit because then, you know, we talked so much about the passing offenses in this one, but it really ended up being about the running game in this game.
Yeah.
But yeah, another breakout game for Lavelle Wright, had 91 yards, two touchdowns on his way to getting offensive player of the week. And his two third quarter scores, proved to be the difference maker. What about on the Bears side? I know that we kind of talked about, you know, last week, that being something that they need to find that complementary run game, to support Jacob Clark, in that pass game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Bears, like you said, when it came down to the running game, Bears ran for 214 yards. You know, on the ground there, led by Shamari Lawrence, he had 78 yards and a touchdown. And then you had Deuce Bailey with 8 carries and 61 yards. You know, when you have your quarterback go down and a stud like Jacob Clark is, you know, hopefully, you know, he gets to feeling better and feeling right and get back out there. But, you know, you got to have guys step up. And when you can put the rock on the ground there and get it going like that, like the way they did, you know, it'll I know that game didn't end the way they wanted to in the win-loss column, but hopefully this can get them going and just get some confidence in that run game.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some good to take away, even in a loss, just from what you saw from Deuce Bailey. Yeah. You know, you kind of have to take the stats with a little bit of a grain of salt, you know, knowing that he's kind of thrown in. You know, he's not running with the ones in practice right now. It might have to be, you know, this next week or two as they get ready for their next one. But, you know, all things considered, a pretty impressive debut for, and he's a Bowling Green native too. That was another storyline that kind of, you know, it's so funny how those cities, those programs seem so intertwined with the guys that are, you know, going one way or the other. But yeah, you know, another couple things we talked about in this one, you know, WKU head score. They have been one of the most efficient offenses in the country in scoring touchdowns when they get to the red zone. They had scored touchdowns on 15 of their 18 red zone trips. And, you know, while Missouri State did give up two touchdowns, they had they also held them to two field goals. So I think it's just little things like that where, you know, that Missouri State defense, you know, has shown that they can be kind of bend, don't break. Yep. And even against one of the best, you know, red zone offenses in the country, they managed to do that. So, but ultimately WKU moves to 2-0 in CUSA play for the third straight season. You know, I feel like with WKU fans, I'm probably preaching to the choir, but you got to, every year, right, has been, they're like, this is the year, you know, they bring in another transfer quarterback and they're finally going to get over the hump, win a conference championship. It seems to be trending that way right now, or at least getting back to the championship game. But obviously, you know, a lot more season left to play, but curious to see if, you know, maybe this is WKU's chance to finally do it.
I think they can all agree that they don't maybe not playing the best football that they want to be playing right now, but we saw glimpses the first couple weeks of like this team can be special. I mean, like really special the way the offense was running. And yeah, maybe they're not playing great football right now, but they're finding ways to win games here in conference play. So I think things are going to, you know, come down the right way for WKU.
Yeah, and we, you know, run game is not something we talk about when you talk about the WKU offense, and that's something that they're starting to find, especially with Lavelle Wright in that backfield right now. So if you're being, you know, if you're able to move the ball in a couple different ways and not having to rely on Maverick to throw the ball 50 times a game, you're definitely going to find some success as well. So, yeah, we'll see how that continues to trend for them. The nightcap on Saturday, Louisiana Tech at UTEP. And if you're a football purist, may not have been one of your more enjoyable watches if you tuned into this one, but 9 total turnovers between these two teams. It just kind of felt like every other play it was going the other direction. But this La Tech defense proves that it is just inevitable.
Yeah.
5 interceptions, 2 pick sixes, 23 of their 30 points off turnovers. They just continue to do it week in, week out.
Yeah, these guys are flying around the gridiron. It's really fun to watch, and, you know, I think the offense feeds off of it a little bit. You know, maybe they didn't have, like, the start of the game that they wanted to on offense, but, you know, feeding off this defense, the way they're flying around and grabbing, you know, turnovers left and right, it's maybe they're kind of forcing these ugly games, but they're winning them, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah, and that's got to be, a good-ish place to be for that offense that – you know, hey, we know we have a good defense to rely on, that we don't have to go out there. We don't have the pressure to have to throw for 300 yards, right, have to run for 200 yards to win a ball game, because we know as long as we just get a couple scores, you know, the other guys are going to take care of business for us. But yeah, there are 11 interceptions, 5 defensive touchdowns are the most in FBS. And their 11 interceptions tied for 4th most by a CUSA team through the first 5 games of a season. But like you said, you know, it wasn't a perfect night for the Bulldogs. They had 4 turnovers of their own. They struggled in the trenches. They were letting, you know, UTEP has been known to have guys in the backfield constantly. And that remained the case in this game. But, you know, again, they overcame all of this, came away with a big win on the road in the Sun Bowl, something that, you know, isn't always easy to do, and kept it rolling. They're also 2-0 in CUSA play right now. So, you know, we'll talk about it later as we talk about some upcoming matchups that we're looking forward to. But there's one coming up here in a few weeks between these two teams at the top of the standings that could be very interesting and potentially played multiple times this season. But then obviously we wish the best to Colby Fields. Haven't seen any news on what that injury is, but you said it earlier, next man up mentality. Alonzo Jackson Jr. comes in, really impresses, you know, off the bench in that same role. So we'll see how it continues to play out for Louisiana Tech. But it was a great weekend of conference play. It was great to have a few matchups. You know, we had just having a little taste of conference play each week leading up to this. But it's nice to have a few games that we got our eyes on, and getting closer to a lovely weekday CUSA. Of course, we had to get on here and don the shirts. Really just you're welcome, nation, because we're giving you midweek football for the next 4 or 5 weeks. Now you got Tuesday, Wednesday night football on CUSA, Thursday night football. You get your Friday night light, high school football, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Every day of the week's covered now. So you guys are welcome for that. But we'll get into more of our weekday CUSA preview later. But as I mentioned, we have a great interview coming up. Commissioner Judy McLeod is joining the podcast for a conversation with Commissioner Sarah Rudolph. Will be handling that conversation. We'll be covering lots of things from the landscape of college athletics to things going on in Conference USA, and get her takes on the first month or so of the college football season, some takeaways from Conference USA football. You definitely need to watch this one. I'm sure it'll be shared plenty. Lots of clips and sound bites will be coming out of this one, but really appreciative of her coming on to the podcast. So enjoy our conversation with the commissioner, with Judy McLeod and Sarah Rudolph.
Hey, Conference USA fans, welcome into a special edition of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I am joining you here from our podcast studio with Commissioner Judy McLeod for a special conversation with the commissioner. Commissioner Judy McLeod, thank you so much for joining us. We're excited to have you here for your first segment here on CUSA Insider.
Yeah, I think I'm excited.
We'll see
how it goes.
Yes, we'll see how it goes. Hoping to bring you one of these maybe every month, at least every 2 months, maybe get you here a little bit often just to kind of tell us about the state of the conference. There's a lot going on in college athletics right now that we want to discuss today. So we are hoping to bring you guys episodes just like these every so often. So, Judy, I just want to start off first because this is a really big year for you. A big milestone for you here at Conference USA. So this October marks your 10th year as Commissioner of Conference USA and your 20th with the league as a whole. So I'm sure that this is kind of a loaded question because a lot has changed since you first became commissioner here, but any milestone moments that you look back on and really think about that have shaped this league in the last 10 years as your tenure has gone on?
Yeah, probably saying a lot has happened. That's probably one of those Captain Obvious comments. College athletics, I think, is in a constant state of transition, and Conference USA has been doing pretty much the same. So, you know, I think some of the big competitive highlights stand out, whether that was the men's basketball team in the Final Four, football team playing in a New Year's Six bowl game, and then we've had 3 national championships, men's soccer, and then 2 in women's bowling. So those are always special, but for me, really the journey and how we got there is probably just as important. All the sacrifices, all the hard work that our young people do and our administrators and coaches and presidents and athletic directors and everything. I think it all comes down to people in the end. And the one thing that I am really proud of is this conference has always been willing to embrace change and willing to find a way to adapt positively and grow and be resilient. And I think we've kind of become known for that. And we take pride in that, you know, because we're going to keep getting better. Circumstances are going to change and we're going to have to change along with them. But as long as we look at opportunities through all of that change, I think that's one of the things that makes us special. I think the other thing is we've never lost the focus on why we do what we do. So it's about the student athletes. It's about a transformational time in young people's lives. And we can't ever forget that and the educational part of that. And so as corny as that might sound, you know, these days, it's still important. And I think we keep that in mind as we work through all the changes.
And I do love that you mentioned that because I've been here for almost 8 years now. And as I've sat through internal staff meetings and things like that, if I can think about you and how I see like what you're talking to us about from a league perspective, 2 words stand out for me, or 2 phrases, I guess. It's being innovative. You're not afraid to do that. And then it's all about the student athlete. And I think that you kind of encompass both of those things in your answer right there. But one thing that was very innovative at the time was that you were the first female FBS commissioner in all of college athletics. As you look back on that and what was going on during that time, like, how has that trailblazing role shaped how you operate as a commissioner, and how excited are you that more female commissioners have come up through the ranks over the last several years?
Yeah, this question's always kind of been, I don't know, I don't want to say it's a weird one, but
yeah.
You know, I became an FBS AD at a very young age. And so whether it's you're the youngest or you're female and nobody's ever, you know, I got all those questions. And then I became the commissioner and I got similar questions. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is like 20 years apart. Like, what's going on here? But I do think, you know, those firsts are all happening and now it's not. I mean, that's not the storyline.
Right.
Right? I mean, I'm really proud that there are more female FBS commissioners now, 2 more. When I sit in the commissioners' meetings, which is all 32 conferences, the change really from people's backgrounds, ethnicity, gender, everything is remarkable. And it's wonderful because I think those are all the things that bring new ideas and help all of us be better. And so, you know, over the years, I felt like a little extra, I got to do a little extra sure. to make sure. But really, it's been a privilege to represent the university I did when I was an athletic director, and now the conference and the many schools and student athletes. And so that's what I'm going to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we talked a lot about the many changes that are happening in college athletics right now. We're going to talk about a few of them today. But the first one that I want to ask you about is just the landscape of college sports and how it's evolving on the revenue generation side. So a lot of things going on there. But just last year, we announced a partnership with Rev Entertainment on conference naming rights. We were one of the first to do that. What are you seeing right now in just the revenue generation realm and how that may be shaping the league's future going forward?
There's no question it continues to be, you know, revenue generation is right up there on the priorities, probably tied with everything else. But it's got to be a constant focus, because the more we can provide for our members, you know, the more they can do for their student athletes. And so we have to look at new ways to do it. I mean, we'll talk to just about everybody. We may not end up doing some things, but I think we have done some innovative things. Our presidents and ADs have been open to exploring different options. Partnering with Rev is a great company. They're a great company, and they've provided a lot of avenues into different things, whether it's an entitlement or something else. And then we have our own in-house CRO who's selling as well. So this day and age, you have to look at any opportunity. I know people throw out the private equity term and everybody kind of freaks out, and then it makes the headlines and then it goes away, and you know, capital, whether it's capital partner, whatever it is, we have to be able to have an opportunity to ask our members, is this something you guys want to do? And if it's not, we move on to the next one. But being nimble like that and being open, I think it's going to have to continue to be a priority for us.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's not just a priority for us, like you were saying, it's priority for all of the commissioners and all of the conferences out there. I know something that came out of the commissioners' meetings was the opportunity to sponsor uniform patches. What are you, what type of opportunities do you see for the league going forward? I know this is a new concept, but anything that's being talked about right now?
Yeah, you know, we're hopeful it's something we'll be able to do next year. What the parameters around it are, we're not sure whether that's going to be a conference decision or a national decision or what's going to happen there. You know, and then we have to work with our membership. Is it something conference-wide? Is it different sports? Is it, you know, so there are all kind of layers to it. But, you know, if you turn on a NBA, WNBA game, it's not even unusual. Like right. For me, at least. Seeing a sponsor name here and a sponsor,
we're all used to it now.
Yeah, it doesn't change my perception of what's going on the court. And so, you know, as the demands on us get more and more, we just have to find different revenue access. And so that's one that I think will be very helpful to us.
And just announced last week, you know, we are not poo-pooing on the good old-fashioned title sponsorship either.
Absolutely not.
So just announced last week that Air National Guard will be our title sponsor for football and our men's and women's basketball championships. How impactful is it to bring a partner like this on for some of our premier sports, our big revenue-generating sports?
Yeah, and I think the key word they use is partner. And so how do we benefit them and how do they benefit us? And the national exposure for them and us is going to be tremendous. And so really looking forward to that. But again, it's just another opportunity to help offset our costs and provide revenue for our partners and doing it in a tasteful way.
So beyond those things that we've already discussed, are there any other initiatives that maybe some fans out there don't know about or anything else that you can talk about on the revenue generation side that we could explore or be looking at?
Probably.
We're still figuring it out day by day. Yes.
Day by day. You know, I just think we're open. We're open to it.
Yeah.
And we're not trying to overly commercialize things. But it's a part of the equation now. You know, the other side that is important to me is when we partner with some of these people, can we get internships or other things for our student athletes for and their development? I think it was when I talked to the basketball group last year, the student athlete engagement group, they talked about that, having some different opportunities for professional development, you know, outside of their norm. And so I think if we can do some things like that, it just adds to their experience and their ability to go forward and you know, make a good life for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes back to that core belief of ours that it's all about the student athlete. Well, I don't think that we can talk about revenue generation without talking about the national legislation and all that landscape that has been all over the news. If you haven't seen all of the things that have been out recently, then you're missing out. It started with the House settlement, which I feel like we're not even that far removed from, and we're already adding new things to it. So this rapid shift in all of this governance is still very fluid. But can you talk to us a little bit about the SCORE Act? Because I know that that was a huge, busy topic, I'm sure, at commissioners' meetings last week and just in general this fall. Can you walk us through your positives, I guess, from the SCORE Act? And then if you haven't seen it, new legislation dropping just yesterday, the SAFE Act as well. So again, very fluid. But if you could just share your thoughts on the SCORE Act with us.
Yeah, and I think you got to start with the House settlement. You know, for months and months and months, that's all we were talking about. And what's the exact form of it? What does it look like? Those of us that weren't in the direct conversations because we weren't involved in the lawsuit, had more information, but they couldn't share because it was a confidential process. And so as that has rolled out, number one, I think the Power Four have done a great job setting up a framework and getting things in place. I think Brian Seely in this College Sports Commission, I think he's a great ad, but it's just going to take a lot of time. You know, we're 2 weeks out of the gate and people are already like, oh, this doesn't work. Well, it's like, let's, you know, we're building the plane as we're flying it. So let's wait and see if we can work through it all. So I think that's a positive development, number one. And then the SCORE Act through the House, you know, our position has always been we support the three main tenets of the SCORE Act. We can't live with this patchwork of different state laws. And so that state preemption is really important. Almost every student athlete I've talked to is not interested in an employee model. They're mm-hmm. interested in the student athlete model. And so that part's important. And then a little, you know, people think, oh, we're trying to get full antitrust protection. But if you look at right now, the number of eligibility lawsuits, I mean, every time we turn around and we can't make a rule that really makes sense and is really for the good of young people because we're going to get sued in some sort of fashion. So I think those three tenets are important. And I think this is progress and we need some momentum. And so it's really important that we can get the SCORE Act out of the House. I'm still with my fingers crossed. but I think we've made actually some really nice communication within the commissioners groups. There were concerns on some different things. And so there was a lot of give and take back and forth with that group. And so that had a positive outcome. So and
I think I just saw yesterday there were 10 more conferences that put their support in for the bill as well.
And we're working on trying to get everybody to put something in. So we have supported it individually as Conference USA. And so hopefully, you know, I know government shutdown is a scary part of all this, another wrinkle. But then if we can get that through, if that does go through the House, then you know, the next is the Senate. And so that's where the SAFE Act came out of. I would not be surprised if another bill is dropped in short order as well. And then you have to, you know, I'm not a politician. I understand it more than I used to.
Right.
But there's a lot of things that go into, you know, getting that thing to a vote, whatever bill it is. And then those two aren't going to match exactly. And so then they have to figure out where we go from there. So not an easy process, but I do think it's really important that we're at this place now where we finally made some changes. College athletics was pretty hesitant to make changes for a long, long time, and we just need some help. And so I think we as membership and as the NCAA have demonstrated that you know, we are going to put protections in for the student athletes for their medical, mental health, for scholarship protection, multi-year scholarships, everything else that's important. And now we need some help to continue to make this and really, you know, college athletics is a model you're not going to find anywhere else in the entire world. And it's special.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to lose it. I don't want to lose the attachment to education, which can be a huge part of a young person's life. I used to tell our student athletes when I was an AD, you get your degree, no one can ever take that from you.
Right.
And that's going to help you build your life and do some great things. So I think, it changes every day. I mean, by the time we're done talking, we might have something else.
I know, right? We're recording this episode on September 30th. It's supposed to come out tomorrow on October 1st. Who knows? Because we came up with all of these topics on last Friday and they've already changed since then. So obviously, clearly a very important subject, though, with one bill already, another one coming out yesterday, and then a possibility of a third coming out. So this is obviously a hot button topic, not just in college athletics, but for the national government structure as well. Well, you talked a little bit about a piece of the SCORE Act that I want to focus on at a Conference USA level, and that was the importance of adding mental health resources into whatever legislation comes out of Congress. And so one thing that I am super proud that we do here at Conference USA is we have a really, really heavy focus on student athlete mental health. And I know that you recently met with our Conference USA SAC. That's the Student Athlete Advisory Committee, for those of you who don't know, at their annual retreat in July. And I know that that was a subject that you guys talked about a lot. Were there any key takeaways from those meetings, whether they're mental health related or otherwise, that you want our fans to know about?
Yeah, one thing I'm really proud of is we were one of the first conferences years and years ago to start pushing the mental health talk. You know, it's okay to talk about it. You know, we need to get to a point where whether you have a sprained ankle or you have a mental health issue, those should both be treated and there should not be stigma. But that's hard in athletics when, you know, you want to push yourself and you want to work through things and coaches want to push you. And so I'm proud that that's been a theme of our SAC for a good number of years. And, you know, it's also encouraging that, you know, one of the things I talked to them about is, okay, so what we've been doing so far, is this actually making an impact? And when you hear that it has, because at the conference office, different from the campus, you don't get that immediate feedback.
Right.
So you make a decision on campus that has to do with a young person. You're probably going to know pretty soon if that was a good decision or not, or, you know, the outcome or feedback. You don't get that here. We can put in a program that we think is really beneficial, but it's hard to measure the impact. But, you know, it still is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. I mean, like when I was a student athlete, we didn't have social media. You know, it was hard enough as it was. We didn't even have some of this stuff. Our continued focus is really important to me. I mean, we made, the board approved like a 5-year plan. And so we're working through that. We've been specific in the past, like, here's what we're going to provide. We're going to provide workshops that help train coaches or others, not like they have to be the person to deal with it, mm-hmm. but they have to understand it. And be able to recognize and know what to do, where to send somebody to get some help. And then different needs changed. And so we're moving to more of a menu approach, what different campuses might need. They can pick and choose. And then we always have green out games, which.
You're wearing your mental health green today.
It is extra yard for teachers. So I give a little plug for that as well. To bring that recognition and just make it a normal part of, you know, our society, I think is really important.
And we're actually leading into Mental Illness Awareness Week, which is next week. World Mental Health Day is next Friday, I believe. And our SAC group is full on ready and making content to support next week. So I know it's something that is really, really important to them. Were there any other initiatives from the student athlete group outside of mental health that you guys talked about at all? Any maybe financial resources with NIL and things like that that came out of those meetings?
Yeah, we always talk about the financial piece, but it's become more important in their eyes now because things are different and taxes are different and things that they deal with, they didn't have to deal with before. So, and I would say when the SAC comes in for their meeting, it's like my favorite time of the year. And just that's what I miss about campus. So when I get to interact with the young people, it's pretty special. So they're such great representatives of their universities and their communities. And the other aspect, the community part, you know, they want to make sure that we're all doing a lot in each community to support the specific needs of different communities. I know they're going to have some food drive initiatives and some other things like that. So that, and then I go back to the career planning aspect. And I think every campus has career planning on it. But, you know, the more we can try to enhance that with our connections, I think is important to them as well.
And I think that's something that the average fan doesn't necessarily see either from a sponsorship deal or a partnership deal, is a lot of the things that we do incorporate financial counseling resources, career help and internships and things like that. And I think that that is awesome that we put such an importance on that. Okay, switching gears just a little bit. We're going to the playing field now. We've talked about a lot of the behind the scenes stuff, but we're about a little over a month into the football season now. Weekday CUSA is about to begin. We're rocking our t-shirts today. What have you thought about the season so far? What have been your biggest takeaways?
Yeah, I would say I think we're improved as a league over last year. I think it's wide open, to be really honest.
And wild.
It's so hard to tell now with transfers and the number of different players. And so part of the early stuff is just getting to know, like, what every team's looks like this year, what their strengths are. You know, our two newest teams have performed really well. You know, Missouri State goes to Marshall and gets its first FBS win. Delaware has a couple now, one in league and then beating UConn. So we take pride in who we bring in the league and, you know, make sure they're ready to compete. And those two are perfect examples of that. You know, I think it's, I would say, I probably shouldn't say so, but I doubt anyone's going to go undefeated in the league.
It would be tough.
But we have two 2-0 teams, 4-1 overall in Western Kentucky and La Tech, who are off to great starts. You know, both have had a tough loss, but undefeated in league play. But again, you know, we're starting Weekday CUSA and just about anything can happen.
Yes, anything can happen. There is a litany of stats from last year about how several of those games came down to one score. Lots of excitement, obviously, across the league as far as Weekday CUSA goes. But from a conference perspective, what excites you most about this initiative? We are the only show in town on Tuesdays and Wednesdays throughout the month of October. Nationally televised games. What is so great about this initiative just for Conference USA as a whole?
Yeah, it's probably exceeded my expectations. You know, I think when we first did it, everyone's a little nervous about it, me included. But the coaches bought in very early, and that gave us a lot of, you know, if the coaches are not going to be supportive, then it's kind of a rough road. And we have a great group that was like, hey, if it can help us get some exposure and show our teams on national TV in prime time when no one else is playing, I mean, let's go. And so a lot of our campuses have embraced doing different things, a lot more student turnout. I know it's just tough sometimes. It's different. Families sometimes can't stay the whole game. I get it. I know there's some trade-offs. But for us as a conference to show our brand of football on that national stage has been very important for us and very important for our schools. And so, you know, we try to have fun with it. And, you know, Western Kentucky always has a concert before one of the games. Other schools are doing different promotions. And so I'm really excited. I really don't know what to do on Saturdays.
I know it's tough. Watch other football. Like, why would we do that?
What's wrong? Some of our ADs have said that thing, like, could I go play golf on Saturday? Yeah. Well, you know, do you have anything else going on campus?
Right. But
it's different, but it's exciting, and I think our players have grown to love it. And turn the lights on. Let's go.
All right, we get underway this week, everybody. Super excited about that. Well, You already told me that you don't think anyone is going to go undefeated in conference, so I won't make you make a conference championship prediction. I'll leave that to me and Josh to mess around with later in another episode. But anything else from a league perspective that, I don't know, that you want fans to know or that you want to get out there? Conference USA has been through a lot of transition over the last several years, but we're here and we're here to stay. And I think that that is a huge message that's come out of this office. But is there anything else, just from your perspective, that you want fans out there to know about this league?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question. But if we're staying on football for the moment, I think, and I probably shouldn't say this because some people will come steal them away, but we have tremendous football coaches in this league. And I'm just so impressed with their ability to adapt and just how they run their programs. It's been fun to watch and fun to cheer for those guys because I just think they do a tremendous job. But overall, you know, I think we're a league that we're not afraid to play anybody in any sport. We love the challenge, and I think there's a lot of opportunity out there for us to show what we can do.
All right. Well said. Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, thank you so much, Judy, for joining us for our first conversation with the commissioner. Definitely not our last. Thank you so much for joining the show, and we'll have you back on this couch on another day.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you to Commissioner McLeod for taking time out of her busy schedule to get on the podcast and have some really amazing discussions. I'm really excited for all of you to hear this one. But back to football. Like we said, Weekday CUSA, just a super exciting time of year. And, you know, last year we kind of did this, you know, picking out some of our best matchups to watch. We're kind of doing the same thing, a little different, pivoting a little bit to just kind of our top five games that we're really excited for in this slate. Because I think that a lot of these, maybe people at the beginning of the year didn't think that they were going to be as good. And now that we've had a couple breakout teams, there's some really exciting matchups here. We'll start this upcoming Friday. We'll get into it more here in a little bit. But WKU at Delaware. Delaware opening up their CUSA home slate against the Hilltoppers, like we mentioned earlier, a perennial CUSA team. But I know just from talking to Ed, their SID there, that the tub is going to be bumping for this one. They're kind of rolling out the red carpet for this one. You got CBS Sports Network broadcasting the game there in Newark. But yeah, should be a great one between.
Yeah, kind of interesting too, because you have, you know, WKU's playing back-to-back weeks against, you know, Missouri State opening their CUSA time at home, and then Delaware here. So that's a tough little stretch for the Hilltoppers there to look out for, but I'm sure they're ready for the task.
Yeah. Then we move on to the following week, Thursday, October, or actually, I guess we'll talk more about that one, you know, that one, time, date, network and all that. But Thursday, October 9th, 6 p.m. Central on ESPNU, we have Louisiana Tech at Kennesaw State. And this is one where really, if you'd asked me, you know, 2 months ago, I'd be like, yeah, okay, you know, this might be an interesting game, but okay. I mean, now the implications on this game, because we have a team we just talked about, you know, Louisiana Tech starting 2-0 in conference play. They're 4-1 overall, going on the road to Kennesaw State, where, you know, that's them at home. They take very seriously. They just finished up a great win streak there. You know, now that they're kind of, you know, 3-2, they won their conference opener. This one's got a whole lot more intrigue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's seeing the glimpses of offense from this Kennesaw State team, and, you know, obviously the defense that we talked about with La Tech, like something's got to give a little bit early on in this game, especially the way Kennesaw has been playing out the gates. Mm-hmm. I'll be curious to see how this game starts out.
Yeah.
And who can kind of get the momentum early.
Right. Yeah. Because that Louisiana Tech secondary is probably going to be playing on their heels a little bit, knowing, you know, how Kennesaw State's going to want to come out with some big plays. And so, yeah, that'll definitely be one to watch. Definitely don't want to be late to that one either, just to see how that first drive or two goes.
Yeah.
And then the following Tuesday, October 14th, 7 p.m. Central on ESPNU, we have FIU at WKU. And I think, you know, FIU, it's been kind of an up and down so far. You know, they get a big win over Bethune-Cookman to start the year. You know, you go up to Happy Valley, you know, you fall at Penn State, but you look good. You come back, you know, you beat your rival. And then you turn around, you lose to, you know, an FBS newcomer in Delaware who, you know, that win is kind of, you know, you're like, all right, well, they're 3-1. Yeah. But, you know, so trying to right the ship a little bit now that they've gone on this roller coaster. And then you go on the road to WKU, who, again, we've kind of already talked about them a little bit. But I'm just really excited to see this one. It's a great quarterback matchup between Kiwon Jenkins and Maverick McIver. Just really interested. That's one where I'm just, you know, it's just interesting. Like, I just don't know what to expect out of this game right now.
Quarterbacks definitely have to be the storyline in this one. You got two veteran guys kind of riding the wave with their teams. And yeah, like you said, FIU's been kind of riding the ups and downs so far this season, but it's still early. There's still a lot to play for. And I know Kiwon Jenkins wants to guide that offense to a lot of success, and same with McIver at WKU. So should be a fun one to watch with the quarterbacks.
Yep. And then the following night, Wednesday, October 15th, 6 p.m. Central on ESPN2, we have Delaware at Jacksonville State. And I think if you look at the standings, you say, yeah, this is a great game, right? Because just kind of where these teams are at right now, Jack State coming off of a CUSA championship last season, at the site of where they won their, that conference championship, they'll be hosting Delaware there at Amherst Stadium. And I think it's just awesome when you get, matchups of these new teams to FBS that have been so successful. I mean, we've seen Jack State go on a few 9-win seasons here since they announced their transition. Delaware obviously making some noise in year one. So it's just fun, man, to have these teams that are, making the most of some great opportunities to be at this level.
No doubt. And it's the fiery, it's the passion on the sidelines. It's, the crowds, just seeing around campus, seeing what the crowds look like. It's a lot of fun to watch and seeing these players just get after it week in and week out.
Yep. And then couldn't wrap up with a better matchup here. Tuesday, October 21st, 6:30 p.m. Central Time on CBS Sports Network. They got a good one. WKU at Louisiana Tech. And I'm just going to go out and say it right now, because I know about this time of year last year, Sarah got on the podcast, made her championship game prediction. I'm putting my Sharpie on this one right here. It's kind of the low-hanging fruit, right?
Yeah,
because of what you've seen from both these teams so far. But WKU, the perennial team going on the road. And this, take it back a year, because Louisiana Tech was the one that stopped WKU's run last year with a very gritty defensive game. That kind of put an end to their, bid to try and host the conference championship last year. So WKU definitely has a little added edge, a little chip on their shoulder after the way that one played out. But this one is going to be a big one.
Yeah. And if you talk this into existence where these two teams could be playing, this game right here could have a lot of implications on, where we will be playing that possible game in December, if it'll be in Ruston or if it'll be in Bowling Green. So, not saying it'll be these two right now, but you never know. This game will surely have a lot of implication on postseason play.
Yep, definitely. All right, well, we'll get into the first slate of weekday CUSA games coming at you this week. We start Thursday evening, October 2nd. Yeah, late night CUSA, 8 p.m. Central kick on CBS Sports Network. Sam Houston at New Mexico State. This one, both teams kind of coming off, looking to get off of skids that they're on right now. But for New Mexico State, obviously this is a great opportunity for Logan Fife against the Sam Houston defense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you see it's Fife has been a steady presence under center so far this year. The lower completion percentage due to lots of shots downfield, but been very productive. And it'll be fun to watch them go against this Sam Houston passing defense.
Yeah, I mean, this offense definitely, screams the David Yost offense. He's tied for 10th nationally with 21 passes over 20 yards. So he's taking a lot of shots, but he's also connecting on a lot of them, too, to get him down the field pretty quick. But for Sam Houston, key here is, really just going to be the turnover battle.
Yeah.
They've had the fewest turnovers in CUSA so far, tied for second in the league in average turnover margin. So, it's elementary, right? Just taking care of a ball will, maybe not necessarily get you wins, but it's going to keep you in ball games.
No doubt.
And then Friday night, October 3rd, 6 p.m. Central on CBS Sports Network, one that we already kind of touched on a little bit, but WKU at Delaware, the CUSA home opener for the Blue Hens, the top two offenses going at it. And we already kind of talked about it a little bit, last week when we were previewing WKU Missouri State, it was the top two passing offenses. Now we get the top two overall offenses. You know, Delaware been a little bit more balanced with the, you know, the pass game and the run game. And I think it's going to come down to the run game and the star in that Blue Hens backfield in this one.
Yeah, and you look at Joe Silver in that backfield and seeing how he will go up against this WKU run defense. It was allowing 210 yards per game at this point of the year. So it'll be a fun matchup to watch for sure, and to see if, you know, he can get loose and go get some big gains. So that'll be definitely fun to watch with these two.
Yep. And I think the other question I have in this one is who's going to get a stop in the red zone? Because, you know, both teams have struggled a little bit, you know, on their red zone defense. They're both allowing over 80% scores on opponents' red zone trips. So it's just going to be, you know, whose defense is going to step up and make a play, you know, in that short field situation. But not a weekday CUSA game officially, but another great one on the slate this week. Saturday, October 4th, 2:30 p.m. Central Time, also on CBS Sports Network. FIU goes on the road to face UConn, who, you know, this one's kind of interesting because they both played Delaware.
Yep.
And they both lost to Delaware. So, you know, we get to see, all right, you know, you'd think that that was more of a litmus test, but it's like, well, you both lost. So who's going to learn from that loss and turn it into this game?
Exactly. I can guarantee you they're both looking back at their film and kind of sharing ideas off of each other's teams there. So it'll be definitely a fun one to watch, and hopefully one that FIU can get back in the win column, get some confidence going into a big matchup with WKU.
Yeah, and I think if you're, you know, Keyshawn Owens, your coach Hippolyte, the running back coach for FIU, you're watching that Delaware film and seeing, okay, they ran for 247 yards and 5 touchdowns against this Huskies defense. How can we do that, right? So we know what this FIU rushing, you know, or this FIU running back room can do between Owens, you know, Devontae Lyons, Anthony Carey. You know, they need to put that all together and find that key to success, move some people, open some gaps, and get the ball down the field. Cause I think that's going to be, you know, really the biggest key to this one for the Panthers.
Yep, yep.
All right. Well, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little, you know, a little bit of other sports that are going on around the league. We haven't really touched on soccer and volleyball. We've been, you know, there's been a lot of non-conference football, but now the slate is lightening up a little bit as we get into weekday CUSA. Definitely need to check back in on our soccer and volleyball successes so far. We'll start with soccer. That's your sport. So I'll kind of let you jump right into, you know, just who've been the top teams. We've, you know, we're a couple weeks into conference play now. Who's really sticking out to you?
Yeah, well, I'll start with FIU, reigning CUSA champions. It was great to be down there in Miami and get to experience them winning on their home pitch. FIU is 3-0 in league play for the second straight season now. You know, they have played a really tough non-conference schedule, as has a lot of our teams, playing really tough non-conference schedule. So it's been fun to see, you know, how that's gotten some of our teams ready for conference play.
Mm-hmm.
FIU had two big wins against Kennesaw State and Jack State, both on the road this weekend. FIU's Monoline Diamond ranks fourth nationally with 4 game winning goals.
Wow.
Two of those coming in conference play so far, and is actually tied for the league lead with 7 total goals now. So she's been impressive to watch there for FIU. Missouri State, who came into the year, obviously is a newcomer to the league, but was going to be, I think, a pick 3rd to finish in the league, and had a rough non-conference slate. I can't lie about that one, but they have, you know, kind of jumped into Conference USA as like, all right, it's an 0-0 record, and let's hop into it. And
they're battle tested now.
Yeah, yeah. they look impressive so far, and you know, there are 2-0-1. Also with wins over Kennesaw State and Jack State this weekend on the road.
And mind you, they came into the league having been unbeaten in their last 2 seasons in the Missouri Valley in conference play. So the unbeaten streak in conference play continues for the Bears, which is insane.
And even, you know, they started league play this year with Liberty, who's, you know, everyone knows about Liberty women's soccer. So for them to come out with a draw on that one on the road, was pretty impressive work. So excited to see how they come down the stretch here. You know, rivalry Middle Tennessee and WKU this past weekend had a draw, a 1-1 draw, but both unbeaten so far. They're 1-0-1 in league play. So excited to see them both go on the road this week with Sam Houston and La Tech, I believe. So it'll be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, and FIU, you know, I think what impresses me most with them is, you know, they had the regime change, right? And you know, that's always tough for any program. But, you know, for Jonathan Garbard, or, you know, go and win a conference championship and then, you know, go take a very warranted job. And then you kind of have to find a way to do it all over again, right? And that's challenging. But we had to see it with Jack State this year with Rich Rodriguez leaving and then Charles Kelly comes in. It's like, well, you feel like they're right back where they started a year ago. And so, yeah, really, you know, I'm happy for them that they're off to a great start. They got a big one coming up. You mentioned Liberty. We get a CUSA championship rematch between the Panthers and the Flames noon Central on Sunday. So excited to see how that one plays out just because, you know, anytime you get just a rematch like that where the emotions were so high in the game prior, that, you know, anyone who is on the sideline for that one, you know, just has a little added edge for sure.
Oh, for sure. And I'm super stoked to watch this game this weekend. And, you know, it's one of those games too. And you, when you're at the conference tournament and you're seeing how the conference tournament just kind of goes throughout the week. And you, when you're there, I feel like I felt it more and seeing how tired these girls were. You know, it's a long week and they're not used to playing, you know, three games in a week, and to see how they absolutely battled all week long, and to see them Liberty just come a bit short. I think they're gonna want a little bit of revenge from this FIU squad for sure this weekend. And another match I'm looking forward to this weekend, both actually on Sunday at noon Central time as well. Delaware's playing Missouri State. So Delaware, a team that started off the year, I think 7-0-1, the best start in program history, getting to play newcomer Missouri State. So that'll be a lot of fun to watch this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. Well, moving on to volleyball. Got to start, you know, of course, we're talking about Liberty again, but Liberty is on a 10-game winning streak. They swept La Tech twice this past weekend. They're off to a 14-1 start. Mind you, they are third in win percentage behind Nebraska and Texas. That's pretty good company to be in, for sure.
It is crazy. And, I mean, I help Jessica Radford. She's always, you know, working on her volleyball stuff. I'm working on my soccer stuff, and I'm reading over her player of the week stuff every week. And I'm like, oh my God, another Liberty offensive player of the week. You know, they've had all 5 weeks has been won by a Liberty offensive player for offensive player of the week. Very impressive. Paige Overcash earned 3 in a row to start the season. It's been fun watching the Liberty team be so successful.
Yeah. And now it's spreading around too, because we've been a different player each of the past 2 weeks. Yeah. So, I mean, just the fact that they're multifaceted there, right? It's not just one girl that's, you know, dominating for them. It's everyone's chipping in right now for the Flames, which is, you know, crazy to see. But along with Liberty, you had UTEP, WKU, New Mexico State, FIU all went 2-0. Lots of sweeps in the opening weekend of conference play. So, which I feel like is tough to see when you know, you're playing back-to-back days like that. Kind of a unique schedule for a lot of our sports. You know, you don't expect to see, you know, a ton of people go 2-0 like that. You think maybe, all right, they learn a little bit from the day before and kind of find a way to get a win the next day. But yeah, we'll see. We got another big one coming up, you know, for volleyball this weekend. Liberty goes on the road at UTEP. Two matches at 7 p.m. Central on Friday and 2 p.m. Central on Saturday. So
not an easy place. No. Not after watching them a few years ago in postseason play. And oh my goodness, that's going to be a tough trip for Liberty for sure. And I know UTEP will be ready to go.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, this has been a great one. You know, really appreciate Eric coming on to the show this week. We had it all. We got our football recap in. We got, you know, a soccer and volleyball check-in. We had Commissioner Judy McLeod on the show. This was a super fun one. Really excited to put this one together for you guys. Just a little housekeeping. As always, please be sure to follow us on social media at CUSA Insider Pod. You know, always love seeing everyone share the great content that comes out of the show. Really want to hear from you guys, too. If you want to see some stuff, you'd like some stuff. If you don't like some stuff, you can just keep that to yourself. And then, as always, you can find us wherever you listen to your podcasts, you know, Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music. And then if you found our YouTube, welcome. I hope you're enjoying the video set here. You can always watch us on our YouTube channel. You can just find us at Conference USA. But again, thank you guys for joining another episode of CUSA Insider Pod, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Josh Yonas signing off.